Science Wise on VOW 88.1.
Welcome to Science Wise. My name is Christophagus Sibuka. It is the 12th of August, 2025, and it is a Tuesday. Today's show is going to be an interesting one indeed. It's 6 minutes past six right now. I'm going to be with you up until 7 p.m. talking all things science and technology. And today is no different. We are about to dive into an exciting edition of Science Wise Show. Today, we're going to be talking about something that's quite interesting, which is nuclear energy. But it was something that we're going to dive into in a couple of minutes. And we're also going to be touching on rock art again on the last part of the show. But then also, we're going to be having our exciting features that we always have every single Tuesday here on Science Wise, Science News and Science Cool Facts, our weekly features that shares insights from the world of science and technology. Today, we're going to be chatting, actually not necessarily chatting, but we're also going to be hearing what's really happening in the world of science and also hearing some of the interesting facts that science has. Also, if you want to be part of the conversation, interact with us on WhatsApp at 074-577-9461, or you can hit us up on our social media platforms at Voice of Vids, or if you would like to call in, call us in at 011-717-9881. And just to give you just a brief, just to give you a heads up, last week on the 4th of August 2025, Wits University hosted the Nuclear Reimagined Youth Reflections, whereby in celebration of young leaders in shaping South Africa's energy future, Wits University Africa for Nuclear and Women in Nuclear Global Youth Young Generation hosted a youth-focused event. This initiative aims to inspire and empower young South Africans, both male and female, interested in energy conservation, with a special focus on the vital role of nuclear science and technology in addressing climate change, protecting biodiversity, securing a clean energy future. That's what we're also going to be chatting about today. We're going to be having two guests in the first 30 minutes of the show that are going to be breaking down all this that took place last week on the 4th of August. So, like I said, if you want to be part of the conversation, if you want to like to ask any sort of question, hit us up on our WhatsApp line at 074-577-9461. Or if you'd like to call in, interact with us, probably you can hit us up at 011-717-9881. It is 8 minutes past six right now. Without wasting any further time, it's time for us to actually head to Science News.
VOW 88.1. We are Brom.
Gut bacteria might help flush toxic forever chemicals from the body. Scientists have discovered that some human gut microbes may help the body get rid of harmful PFAS, the so-called forever chemicals found in many everyday items like nonstick cookware, waterproof gear, and stain-resistant fabrics. In a study published in Nature Microbiology, researchers showed that gut bacteria in mice were able to absorb and remove PFAS, with the chemicals being expelled through feces. PFAS, or per- and polyfluorocarbyl substances, are known to build up in the human body over time and have been linked to serious health issues like high cholesterol, developmental problems, and even cancer. The study led by scientists at the University of Cambridge found that several strains of human gut bacteria, including E. coli, were able to soak up large amounts of PFAS in lab conditions with no harm to the bacteria themselves, especially treated mice with human-like gut microbes. Researchers observed high levels of PFAS in the animals' feces, suggesting these bacteria help flush toxins from the body. The findings raise hopes for future strategies to reduce PFAS levels in people, possibly through probiotics that contain PFAS-absorbing bacteria. While current efforts mostly focus on removing PFAS from the environment, this study offers a promising look at how our gut microbiome may help protect us from within. Vets innovation makes TB testing safer and faster with SmartSport. A groundbreaking tool developed by researchers at Vets University is transforming how TB is diagnosed, both in South Africa and globally. Known as a SmartSport, the innovation comes from the lab of Professor Bhavesh Khanna, head of the Center of the Excellence for Biomedical TB Research in Bloemfontein. SmartSport tackles a key challenge: how to safely and rapidly validate TB testing machines without exposing healthcare workers to dangerous live bacteria. Back in 2010, the Department of Health adopted molecular TB diagnostics to speed up detection. But these tests needed calibration, a process that was risky, as it required handling live TB bacteria. Professor Khanna and his team developed a solution. They created dried culture spot cards, safer filter papers embedded with killed but DNA-rich TB bacteria. These cards allow labs to test and collaborate their machines without any infection risk. Later, the team took innovation further. They used harmless soil bacteria that mimic TB's genetic signature, creating a non-infectious, fast-growing alternative to help scale testing safely and affordably. Now used in countries around the world, SmartSport has made TB diagnostics more accessible, safer, and quicker than ever before. Professor Kano calls it a powerful example of South African science solving global health challenges through local ingenuity and innovation.
On your radio and online, this is Vow 88.1.
That was science news for the week. It is 11 minutes past 6, and it's time for us to actually head to the interview. Like I said earlier, if you just tuned in right now, you tuned in to Science Wise Show. My name is Christopher Kasavoka. But earlier I said that we're going to be having two guests in the first part of the show, whereby we're going to be talking about nuclear energy, and they're going to be dissecting all and give us all the necessary information that we need to know about also what took place on the 4th of August at Wits University. Just to give you a brief, in celebration of young leaders and shaping South Africa's energy future, Wits University Africa for Nuclear and Women in Nuclear Global Young Generation hosted a youth-focused event. This initiative aims to inspire and empower young South Africans, both male and female, interested in energy conservation, with a special focus on the vital role of nuclear science and technology in addressing climate change, protecting biodiversity, securing a clean energy future. The first gentleman that I'm going to be having in studio today is Mr. Redouane Bakardine, CEO of National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute. A registered engineer, manager, and executive, Redouane has more than 29 years of nuclear and energy sector experience in South Africa, Canada, and France. Having built and led strong teams as an executive over the last 17 years, he transformed performance and achieved long-term excellent results. With a nuclear and engineering background, together with recognized leadership skills, Redouane led the only nuclear power plant in Africa to be among the best performing internationally and set the basis for the extension of the power plant's life. He also worked as an executive leader in the North American power sector, improving the organization's corporate performance. Without wasting any further time, it's time for us to actually head into the interview. And this is the first question that I'm going to ask Mr. Redouane. First of all, welcome. What are the plans to make sure that the nuclear production in South Africa is sustainable?
So If I look at it more broadly, beyond nuclear waste, everything in nuclear is tied together, from your production of fuel to the operations, building new power stations or running the existing power stations. But then importantly, the waste is an important aspect, nuclear and radioactive waste. To sustain operations, you need to be able to manage waste. One can think of it like the human body. If your waste system doesn't work, eventually the body shuts down. So it's similar with nuclear waste. If I think now more broadly on in terms of everything for nuclear, South Africa has the skills. We've been in the nuclear business for the last more than 60 years already. Safari's been running at Pelindaba for over 60 years. Coburg's been running for over 40 years. We've got a well-established and well-respected nuclear regulator. We've got thousands of skilled and experienced nuclear people in South Africa, and with that we have the ability to expand. We've got sites available to build further nuclear power plants, and so we have the capability. It's just about the decision making now to when we proceed.
What are the day-to-day activities of your company? You can just like give us an overall of some of the day-to-day activities of your company.
So the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute, we are a relatively small team, established in 2016, and have been setting up operations since then to take over the full control and full responsibility for radioactive waste across the country. And that means we're still a relatively small team, just under 40 people. And we are currently joining up with the Falpitz facility. There's a team there of around 25 people. So that means we'll be around close to 60 people in the next month or so. And that team is responsible for managing all forms of radioactive waste, for looking at how we package it, ensuring that it's safely done, and that it's then when received at the Vaalputs repository, which is in the Western Cape, that it meets all of the requirements. And so we've got a team there that is able to then safely bury the waste in a suitable location. We've got trenches that get put in place for burying the waste. And that's been done for the last 40 years or so. So it's safe. We've well experienced. And now going forward, we are, though, looking at building the capability of our waste disposal. So at the moment, we've been dealing with the low-level waste. We are now looking to deal with high-level waste, which is mainly your used fuel from your reactors.
Fossil fuel and nuclear energy, can they coexist?
Fossil fuel technology, yes, it can coexist with nuclear, and it has been for decades already, and not just in South Africa, around the world. Nuclear is also able to coexist with renewables, wind and hydro and solar sources. The reality, though, is that South Africa is on a path to move away from fossil fuel to drive its electricity and energy industries. That's because of we know the impact that it has on CO2 emissions, global warming. South Africa as a country has contributed around 0.02% of the global warming we've seen in the world. Now, that might seem like a small amount, but if you add up for each country, I think the U.S. is about 10 to 15 times more than that. But South Africa, a relatively small country, has been quite a big contributor to that. So the intent is there to move away from fossil fuels with time and find ways of actually managing fossil fuels in a way that doesn't cause those emissions. So looking at clean carbon technologies as well, which means you can have the fossil fuels being used for energy or electricity production, but then have the ability to clean it up. So nuclear works well with fossil fuels, and the benefit of nuclear, obviously, it does not have those emissions. It does not lead to global warming, doesn't emit CO2. And it has the capacity and capability to deal well with what the future needs of the world are, actually. If I just think about moving to more renewables are great. And we've seen really the impact thereof in South Africa over the last decade or so. It does need baseload power, else you have the risk of if the coal was not there, if the fossil fuels were not there, if nuclear is not there, a very intermittent energy supply, which could lead to instability on the grid. So that's where nuclear comes in, to give that clean energy, and that can work with renewables and clean fossil fuels.
What are the key priorities of the company for the next 10 years?
As far as nuclear is concerned. So the first one is ensuring that we continue to operate our Vaalputs facility safely, and we look after all of the responsibilities that we have in the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute, which include things like having a database of all the radioactive waste across the South Africa. Going forward, though, we've got a project to go and build a central interim storage facility for used fuel, that will serve the whole country. And that means that fuel from Nexa, Eskom, Coburg, nuclear fuel, as well as the sources that may have come from the medical industry, where the medical sources or sources are used for medical treatment or industrial applications, that we'd be able to take care of all of those. And that will allow us to, and that's close to a 2 billion rand project that we're looking to construct. So that means growing our organization, our team, and our facilities significantly, probably tripling the staffing that we have. And here's where the skills comes in. Nuclear skills are heavily based on science and technology. We need people in the sciences, engineering, but other applications as well, artisans from doing the maintenance work, and then administrative people as well to make sure we take care of and manage all of the systems that we have. So there's a lot of opportunity here to grow, and these skills that we get in terms of managing nuclear waste, particularly the technical skills, they are very portable across the nuclear industry. So us developing and growing our skill base will also enable skills that can be used in the broader nuclear industry and be interchanged as required. So we can imagine having radiation physicists or radiation protection people, physicists, chemists, different kinds of engineers in those roles. And that's the need that's coming to look after that facility. Beyond the central storage facility, which will be done, we're targeting 2030 to have that completed. So quite a big job. We then need to set up a long-term repository. And this is a complex project and takes decades to set up. We're targeting having that in place around 2065. So you might think that's very far away. But before we get there, we need to go and do lots of research to find the right locations, do research, geology, seismology, the weather patterns. And really, if one thinks about it, this job is exciting because you don't just think about what you're doing in the next couple of decades, but you need to think about how that will what that will look like, that used fuel being stored in a deep repository hundreds of years into the future. So there's a lot of opportunity to really expand the knowledge that we have, and we need innovation, we need new thinking in that as well. Finland has now set up their deep geological repository. They're the leaders. They'll be starting moving fuel in there next year. So we will learn from them, but we also want to be leaders in Africa and in the world to be able to support the rest of, and we know Africa is moving forward with nuclear plans. Egypt is busy building. A number of other countries are establishing nuclear programs, and we are the leaders in nuclear waste management and radioactive waste management in Africa. And we need to make sure that we are able to support those around, also create opportunities for South Africa to support the broader nuclear industry.
Thank you so much.
That was Mr. Ridwan Bakadin, a registered engineer, manager, and executive. Ridwan has more than 29 years of nuclear energy sector experience in South Africa, Canada, and France. He's the CEO of National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute. That was the conversation that we had, we're having with him. So now it's time for us to move to Ms. Samantha Graham-Marie, is the Deputy Minister of Energy and Electricity. Without wasting any further time, I want to jump straight into the questions. But just to give you a heads up, it's 23 minutes past 6 right now. If you want to be part of the conversation, hit us up at 0745779461 on our WhatsApp line, or you can call in at 0117179881. Like I said, we have Ms. Samantha Graham-Marie. Without wasting any further time, just want to dive straight into the questions. What is the importance of Wits University hosting such workshops that talk about nuclear energy technology?
So, you know where we've come from. We've come out of years of load shedding. We've come out of a spiraling economy because of load shedding. We've come out of a space where the entire country's psyche was really badly affected by load shedding. So it's absolutely imperative as a country that we find ways to create energy security. That's our first priority. Our second priority is to find ways to create jobs. Because it doesn't help to have these amazing graduates coming out of a university like Wits and they don't have jobs to take up. So what happens, as you know, is that people then go and do another degree because they can't find work. And then they go and apply and they're overqualified, but they don't have experience and they still can't get work. So we have to find ways to, A, create the energy security we need. And by doing that, we have to then look at an energy mix. So that means we've got coal-fired power stations, 85% of our power comes from that. And we're busy now with a renewable energy build out. So we're looking at solar, we're looking at wind, we're looking at battery and a combination of those. And then 5% of our energy comes from nuclear currently. So we've got Kooburg Nuclear Power Station in the Western Cape with two nuclear reactors. And that's stalled. Our nuclear program is stalled for a number of years for a number of reasons. The expense, there was a lot of negativity around nuclear. But the world has taken a different view on nuclear now. It's been seen as a clean energy. And as a result, organizations like the World Bank have come up and said that they will fund projects. It's very expensive up front. but it ends up being your cheapest and cleanest energy once your build has happened. Yeah. So we need to be having the conversations around the energy mix that this country needs. We need to be building out on our renewable energy side of things, and we need to be making sure as well that we meet our decarbonization goals, which means that we should be working towards having net zero carbon emissions by 2050. Mm. I don't think we're going to do it. Yeah. With a country that's reliant to the extent that we are on coal, I don't think it's going to be feasible, but I also don't think that we need to be pushing it to the extent that it's going to damage either our energy security or our job prospects.
In the long run, how can South Africa sustain nuclear energy power stations?
Nuclear is easy to sustain. So, I mean, we've had Kooburg for 40 years. Last year we got the permit to extend the life of Unit 1 for another 20 years. We should know in November whether we can extend the Unit 2 lifespan for another 20 years. So nuclear is a wonderful, stable source of what we call dispatchable power. In other words, base load. It means that it's stable and reliable. So in as much as we love renewables, renewables are great, but you can't power something in the dark if you're only using solar, and you can't power something when there's no wind if you're only using wind. So in order for your renewable energy to become a source of base load, you have to bring in a lot of battery storage. So nuclear is very good in that once it's built, you know, it's a long build time, but once it's built, you've got very stable, very secure power. And then there's new developments in the nuclear field in terms of what we call SMRs, which are small modular reactors. So these are smaller reactors that can be added onto. That's why they're modular. And they're normally around about 100 megawatts. So to compare, Unit 1 and Unit 2 at Kooburg are each 900 megawatts. So this would be a ninth of the size. And that makes it a more feasible option. So, for example, we could start looking at those to replace coal. The IAEA is presenting at the next Energy Transitions Working Group for G20. They will be presenting a report that we've requested on coal to nuclear. So we're looking at how we can adapt that. But, you know, we also need to find ways of using the existing fossil fuels we have. We have a massive coal economy. We have 200 years of coal left in this country. And we need to find, as the minister always says, we don't have a coal problem. We've got an emissions problem. So how do we find ways to use our fossil fuels in a way that's going to be less harmful?
How much energy is needed to sustain South Africa?
At our peak, we were producing 54,000 megawatts of power. We are currently producing, as a country, 27,000 megawatts. So we're producing half of what we were capable of doing. We are now producing less as a government, you know, nationally, than we were when we had stage 6 load shedding. Mm. So what has happened is that a lot of rooftop solar has come online, and that has reduced, obviously, the amount of power that's required by the utility. We're going to be pushing for that a lot more. So what we need from the government is we need government to make sure that there is stable base load to meet the energy demands, but we're also partnering with households, with private businesses to run their own energy so that it becomes more energy secure and that we have the sort of agnostic approach to energy. In other words, we're making sure that we have every kind of energy that we need to create that balance and that energy security. So, yeah, we have to find ways of increasing our output, because as more and more people come online, we have to be able to address their needs. But what we're also looking at is things like repurposing the INEP grant. So that's a grant that goes to municipalities for electrification. So we're repurposing that now to allow for things like microgrids. In other words, where you've got an informal settlement, instead of putting in formal structures and formal electricity, you create a microgrid for people to utilize. Yeah. So we're going to have to reduce everybody's reliance on the main sort of transmission structure, because we also have a very constrained grid, and we need to build out about 14,000 kilometers of transmission lines if we're going to carry on growing our energy outputs. But that's obviously 450 billion rand, which we don't have lying around, so that'll take place over 10 years. But in the meantime, we have to find other ways of making sure that people have access to electricity that is affordable and available.
What are the opportunities for young people that are doing science in growing nuclear in South Africa?
Look, nuclear is marvelous because, I mean, nuclear, we don't just have energy for nuclear. We have Safari 1 reactor at Pelindaba. So Safari is, we've just celebrated its 60th birthday and we're probably going to do a life extension for another 20 years. Safari is a research reactor. So from Pelindaba, we are one of the top five isotope producers in the world for nuclear medicine. We produce isotopes that go into about 60 countries. We have this amazing nuclear medical research institute at Steve Biko Hospital, where they are doing nuclear diagnostics and treatment, and they create their own isotopes there. So there's a lot in the medical field around radioisotopes and nuclear medicine. There's a lot going on in terms of where they do sterilization of insects to stop them, you know, breeding, particularly things like coddling moths for the citrus industry, the tsetse fly, mosquitoes. There's a lot in agriculture around nuclear. So there's a lot in the non-energy space as well in the nuclear science field. But remember, everything we do now is going to require artisans. So people mustn't think that the only thing that's required for this new energy growth is a degree. We're going to be looking for people that can build and people that can weld and people that are electricians. We need electrical engineers to be heading up these new builds. So we've also got a renewable energy master plan, which is looking at skills development for this evolving industries in energy. And then that'll also be looking at how we industrialize around these programs. What we have to start doing is making sure that we have these reliable pipelines of projects, yeah, so that people know that there are opportunities. We spoke to a bunch of university students at the Youth and Energy Summit earlier this year, and they were saying, our lecturers are saying to us, there's really nothing for us out there. We need to change that perception. We need to make sure that these graduates know that when they're finished at university, there are jobs waiting for them. That's our job as government, and we are taking that job very seriously.
Deputy Minister, thank you.
Big thank you to Ms. Samantha Graham and Mr. Redwan Bakadine. Thank you so much for the opportunity to engage in such a beautiful conversation that is quite empowering and also that is very informative. It is 18:32 right now. We actually left with about 27 minutes before we make way for Low Focus, but we're still locked in right here on Science Wise. If you want to be part of the conversation, hit us up at 074-577-9461 or you can call us in at 011-717-9881 or you can head us up on our social media platforms if you want to be part of the conversation. And now it's time for us to actually make way for Science Cool Facts. And when we come after that, we're going to dive back a little bit to rock art. That an interesting conversation that we're going to have with some of the most well-informed and also, you know, informative guests that are going to be educating us about rock art. So with all that being said, it's time for us to make way for Science Cool Facts.
We are Brom.
50% of the world's oxygen is produced by the sea. Our first thought may be the rainforest. But did you know half of the world's oxygen is actually produced by plankton, seaweed, and other ocean-based photosynthesis? The human stomach can dissolve razor blades. Acids are ranked on a scale 0 to 14. The lower the pH level, the stronger the acid. The human stomach is typically rated 1.0 to 2.0, meaning it is impeccably strong. Animals use the magnetic field to know where they are. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, evidence suggests that some animals, including sea turtles, have the ability to sense the Earth's magnetic field and to use this sense for navigation. There are more trees on the planet than stars in the solar system. According to experts from NASA, there are up to 400 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy, but the number of trees on Earth is estimated to be more than 3 trillion. One letter doesn't exist in the periodic table. If you have studied science in KS3, it is highly likely you will have come across the periodic table. It contains a large number of letters or multiple letters associated with elements, but one letter in the alphabet doesn't feature the letter J. Water can boil and freeze at the same time. What is known as triple point exists in science. It occurs when the temperature and pressure is just right for three phases, gas, liquid, and solid, of a substance that to coexist in thermodynamic equilibrium. Spacecraft are hurtling towards the edge of our solar system. The New Horizon Place probe, which already flew past Pluto, is traveling at the speed of 36,000 mph. The SR-71 Blackbird, the fastest aircraft on Earth, travels at a speed of 2.7 mph. If you spin a ball as you drop it, it will fly. The Magnus effect occurs as the air on the front side of the spinning object is going in the same direction as the spin. That means the ball is dragged outwards as well as downwards. Babies have more bones than adults. Babies have around 300 bones at birth. This extra flexibility means they pass through the birth canal, enable rapid growth. With age, many of these bones fuse. Most adults have 206 bones in their skeleton.
Science Wise on Vow 88.1.